Max there, Max there.
It's on
that
for about
4 seconds. Moshe Kibbutar Mesinai, Umasara Lihoshua.
Okay.
So Moshe was Makabal the Torah from Sinai and gave it to Yehoshua. Alright. So here you have an interesting little point. Okay. If you take a look at Rashi, it's something a little unusual, but you could really gloss over it. But Rashi says like this. He starts off, Moshe Kibbutar Torah Mesinai. Okay. And he says, V'limda l'cho Yisrael, Shenemar v'yichtav Moshe as Hashira hazos b'yamahu, v'yilamdeh as b'nei Yisrael. And he taught b'nei Yisrael. So far, so good. Okay. Then he says like this, V'lama ne'mar umesara lihoshua. Why does it say, and he gave it to Yehoshua? V'lo le'lazar ulepinchas. Not to Elazar, not to Pinchas, v'lo l'shivim zakenim, and not to the 70 zakenim, hamis navim b'machaneh. Okay. So he says, why shelo ratza l'masra el mi shahaya memis asmo minu'urav bi'alei chachma. He only wanted to give it to a person that spent his youth in the olei chachma, learning. Okay, so there's something a little unusual in Rashi. Does anybody see something? I mean, Rashi says, Lama Nemar Umasara Lihoshua. Why does it say he gave it to Yehoshua and not to the others? Right? Rashi should have said, Lama Masra Lihoshua. Why did he give it only to Yehoshua and not the others? What does Rashi mean? Why does it say that he only gave it to Yehoshua? Well, obviously, because he only gave it to Yehoshua.
But didn't you say a minute ago he gave it to everyone?
No. It says, why does it say he gave it to Yehoshua and not the others? So Rashi answers because Yehoshua was the only one that spent his youth learning.
Oh, so he really didn't give it
to them. He did not give it to the others. He only gave it to Yehoshua.
Right.
Okay. So it's just a little unusual the way Rashi puts it. He should have said, Lama Masra Lehoshua. Why did he only give it to Yehoshua and not the others?
But I thought what he was asking, the beginning of Rashi says, Lamda L'cha Yisrael.
Right.
Isn't that a problem? Which one is it?
No, well okay, fine. So that's a question also. What's the difference between, why does it say he gave it to Yehoshua if he taught it to everybody? What's the difference between teaching and giving over? Okay, you can ask that question. But that's not my question. My question is, why Rashi now is directing himself specifically to a problem. Then why did Yehoshua get it? There were others that could have received the Masorah that on the surface were equally deserving. Right, and that he answers because they weren't equally deserving. The Yehoshua had a qualification that they didn't have. Okay.
Do you think there's a distinction between giving over and teaching?
Apparently.
No, because maybe it could be really he taught it/ gave it over to everyone.
Okay.
And it only mentioned. So the question is, why did it only name Yehoshua? And the parameter of that is that. We only wanted to name someone who learned in their youth.
Okay.
Maybe gave it over equally.
In other words, there's something going on. There's some kind of confusion of what does it mean to give over, apparently. Right? I mean, is it teaching? Is it, what exactly is it? Right? I mean, apparently that's what Rashi's grappling us. What is this Masra Lehoshua? I mean, Lamda, he taught it to all Israel. Okay, so there's an interesting. Okay, you want to think about it a little? Yeah, he says, "Afapi shlo nichtava Torah shabapeh." Even though Moshe didn't write down Torah shabapeh, lamda Moshe Rabbeinu kula bebeis dino l'shivim zakenim. He taught the whole thing, the whole Tosha Bapeh, he taught to the Shivim Zakenu. Okay. Then he says, okay, so there you have, he taught it. Right? He taught it to all 70 Zakenu. Then the Rambam says, Ve'elazar u'Pinchas v'Yoshua. These three, Shloshtan, okay, these three, Kiblu b'Moshe. They were Makabal for Moshe. Okay? So you have a Kabbalah. Okay? Apparently, Shivim Zakenin, he taught it to, but they weren't Makabal. You have a Kabbalah, that's these three. Okay? Then the Rambam goes on, next sentence. He says, V'Yoshua, Shehu Talmido Shel Moshe Rabbeinu, but to Yehoshua, who was his Talmud, okay, Masar Torah Shabbat, him he gave him the Torah, Vitzivahu Aleha, and he commanded him regarding it. Okay, so the first three were Mekabel, but only one had the Masorah. That was to Yehoshua. See, there again, you have this funny thing of Masra. In one of his shiurim, in the yard, one of the Yartzei shiurs that they have here in the yeshiva, he gave a shiur on Masara, on two types of Masara. Okay? And the Rav said there that there's really, when we speak about Masara, okay, about a Bali Masara, there's two types of Masara. There's a Masorah in terms of limud, how to learn, okay? How to interpret the Torah, how to learn, how to paskin, how to engage in svara, okay? And how to extract ideas from the Torah. That's a Masorah. The Moshe Rabbeinu taught the Shivim Zakenim, okay? And they became fluent in how to learn. They could paskin halacha, okay? But there's another Masorah. And that Masorah is, how do we know, for instance, that when that an Esrog, what we call an Esrog, is an Esrog? How do we know the Torah says Priates Hadar? Okay? And we know what an Esrog is. How do we know it's an Esrog? God come along and say, this is not the Esrog, the Moshe Rabbeinu. We have a different Esrog. Okay? Or how do we know any fact in the Torah, Ayin Tachazayin, okay, that you pay monetary damages, how do we know? Maybe you take the guy's eye out. Okay? So, any fact that you have in the Torah, okay, that's a Masorah. Okay? That Masorah was entrusted to one individual. Okay? How do we know any fact in the Torah, what an esrog is, what matzah is? That's because we have it ish mi pi ish mi Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay? That Masorah, you need an appointment. The person is appointed to be the Baal HaMasorah. He is the final word. If somebody will come along and say an apple is an esrog, how do we know he's wrong? We have a direct line from Moshe Rabbeinu. What exactly the facts of the undisputable facts of the Masorah are. Okay? That's not subject to Svara. You can't bring a Svara to show me. Let's say a guy will come up with a Svara that I know now what an esrog is. Very nice, you can have 1,000 proofs, but it's not something that's subject to proof. It's a fact. Okay? So that's what the Mishnah is talking about. When it says Masra Yoshua, it meant the authors had the Masorah of how to learn. They could give Haram. They could argue with Yoshua in Psak, you see. But Yoshua had the final word. They couldn't argue on a fact. If Yoshua said, this is the fact I received from Moshe Rabbeinu, that's it. Or halacha l'Moshe miSinai. Okay, how do we know how many tefachs you have in a certain shear? What a kazayas is. Okay, that a kazayas, the achil is measured by kazayas, a kabetza. These are facts. Okay, so that's what the Rav said. The Rav said that you had an appointment. And each door had a person, okay, that was appointed to be the Baal Masorah. Okay, so that's what the
It doesn't have to be one guy. The next line of the mission says, "If Yeshua is Kainim, that's 70 of them. This Kainim of the Nevi'im, and Nevi'im must rule Allah and check the Sekedola."
Right, they're summing it up. But there were individuals. You see, the Ram later on in the Hakdama, In his Akdama, he gives you each individual who was the Baal Masor from this king.
Doesn't he say, or is this like the basin of?
It was that person and his Besdin. But it was one person that was appointed. Okay? Doesn't matter. If you tell me it's many people, that's fine too. I don't care. I mean, my point is not whether it was one or many. My point is that there was an appointment. That this group or this individual had to have a specific appointment. Okay? It wasn't just you teach them the Torah and the person knows how to learn. He's a Talmid Chacham, so now he has the Masorah. He could argue he could sit on a Besdin. You see? But it means that there's a specific appointment that this person is the final word, or this group, if you want to say group, is fine with me too. Okay? But it's a specific appointment. That's the only thing. That's the only point that I'm trying to get.
So just want to clarify. So you're saying, so there's...
That really they had a Masorah too, Pinchas and Elazar. They had the Masorah of Svara. You see? But who was the one that got the Masorah of the facts? That was Yoshua. Okay? That's it. Alright. So, okay.
That should strengthen your question on Rashi. Because now it's really why did he was really Masira was different is different.
That's right. So that's what Rashi's saying. Why did it single out and speak about Yehoshua? You see, they all had a Masorah. What do you mean, Masorah Yehoshua? He gave it to all of them. You see? But he means, no, there's a separate. There was a separate Masorah to Yehoshua. Okay? That's why he couldn't say, Lama Masorah. Why did he give it to Yehoshua? He gave it to all of them. Okay? But he's indicating that he had a special Masorah. Okay? That was differentiated from theirs. Yeah. So apparently, there's something that Yeshua had, okay, which made him uniquely qualified for this Masorah, right? Apparently, right, the person that will be in charge of ensuring the Masorah has to be the person that somehow has the ultimate perfection, okay, that he is the highest level of person that we can entrust with this task, okay? So the question is, I'd like to understand, Rashi says these are the two qualifications that Moshe saw that said this is the man for the job.
You got it?
That Moshe saw in Yehoshua, he identified these two traits and he said this is the guy for the job. This is the guy we have to entrust the entire Masorah with. Okay? So I'd like to understand what these things are. Okay, apparently they're very important things. I mean, the whole, if Moshe said the whole Masorah is going to depend on this, well, I mean, I think that we should, you know, spend a few minutes anyways to look and see. I mean, you know, if there's any redeeming qualities to these traits. Okay, right? If the person is going to be the Baal Masorah, he should be somebody with that people recognize.
And trust.
Okay, let's take a look at the first reason that Rashi gives. Okay, so Rashi says, "Mamis Atzmo." Okay, he says, "Mamis Atzmo minu'urav be'alecham." Okay, so the first thing I just want to understand, I mean, is what is the idea of Mamis Atzmo? Okay, so maybe. You know, it's an expression that's been discussed before. So you know, I don't want to be too redundant, okay. But what's the general idea of Mamis Atzmo? Okay,
so translated.
Mamis Atzmo means, I mean, it sounds a little morbid. I mean, yeah. It means a person that is Mamis Atzmo kills himself, okay. In the tents of Chachma, okay? Person that has killed himself from early days in learning. Okay, so in other words, I think you're both saying the correct thing. That what is the idea of Misa? What is Misa? Okay, Misa means where a person is separated from the physical, from his physical bodies, and from his physical enjoyments. That's basically what Misa means. Okay, it's the separation of the person from the bodily experiences. Okay, from the body and the bodily experiences. Okay, so Misa represents a withdrawal. It's a mashal. It represents a withdrawal from the instinctual drives and enjoyments. Okay, so it's actually saying a very simple thing. What it's saying is that a person, when he gets involved in chachma, if he wants to really be involved to the nth degree, he must withdraw from his, he must withdraw his energy. It must become a total preoccupation. Okay, if his mind is still directed towards pleasures, the physical pleasures, it takes away from his involvement in the intellectual pleasure. Okay, in the world of ideas. The enjoyment of ideas is a different kind of enjoyment than the enjoyment of the body. And if a person doesn't withdraw his interest, momentarily at least, while he's learning to withdraw his interest from the enjoyments of the body, it will take away from his concentration and his enjoyment in the chachma. Okay? So that's what it means, misa. Okay? It means when a person's involved in chachma, he loses sight of his interests in the physical and the physical enjoyments, and he's totally in a different world. Okay, so in that sense, it's like misa. Okay, but it's not meant in a negative sense, it's meant on the contrary. That the person is free of his desires and free of his of those pursuits, but he's involved in something that could be much more enjoyable. Okay? Yeah. Now, let's say a person removes himself from the taivas and he's totally absorbed in the enjoyment of chachma. Okay? So that's it? What do you care what he did yesterday? I mean, the guy yesterday, fine. Yesterday he was out, I don't know, skating. Fine. But today, right, the man is totally absorbed in chachma, and he's withdrawn from those enjoyments, and now the guy is on a different level. So I have to look back what the guy did when he was 10. I mean, he's 25 now. The guy's been sitting and learning for years. What do I care manure of? Why is that? That's the point. You see, you have... I'll show you an interesting Gemara. See, Gemara says like this. Gemara in Kedushin. It's on Chaf Tes on the base. The Gemara says... Gemara says, Ben Esrim Shana, Velo Nasa Isha, Kol Yamav Bavera. Okay? Person that's 20, that's not married, all of his days will be the Avera, in sin. So the Gemara says, Bavera Salka Daitach? You tell me all the days because the guy's, but now he's married? All the days of the rest of his life he's going to be sinning because he didn't get married at 20? That's not possible. So the Gemara says, no. Ela ema kol yomov behir hor aver. Behir hor aver. Doesn't mean bavera. It means behir hor aver. Okay? So what does that mean? Why is kol yomov he will have thoughts of avera? He will have improper thoughts? What does that mean? Right, so what it's trying to say is like this, that a person that the imagination, you see, gives him certain thoughts. A person that directs himself to certain ideas, imaginary ideas, because of a situation he's in. He may be in a situation of frustration, where his energies are frustrated, and his mind produces imaginary thoughts, okay, that give him some kind of satisfaction. Okay, fantasy thoughts that are not reality, okay, but they give him a satisfaction, a fantasy. What happens is, even when the person corrects the situation, even when he's out of the situation, once the mind is engaged in a certain kind of fantasy, you see, you cannot totally withdraw. Okay? You may not actively be involved in fantasy later on, but those ideas, that fantasy that was produced in the mind, you see, latently it's still there. Okay? It still affects you. So it's saying that once the mind goes on a certain path of fantasy, it has an effect on the mind. And even when the person's withdrawn from it, even when he's no longer in that situation, you see, you can't totally obliterate the fantasy. There's no way to totally remove those ideas that the person engaged in. Okay? You could reduce it, but it's still, it's present in the mind. No way to get rid of it. Once the mind is fixed to a certain fantasy or a certain pleasurable thought, that has an effect on the person. It does not evaporate. There's no way to get it to evaporate. You can reduce it, you can withdraw from it, you see, but the idea is still there. That fantasy that the person has, somehow it's still real to him in some way. Okay? It can't be totally removed. That's what it's saying. Okay? So that's what the Gemara means. That hirhavera means those ideas that were fantastic, that were not real, still he looks to them with a certain kind of reality. You see? And that affects the person. Okay? That's why the Gemara, actually, the Gemara later on, in the next few lines, the Gemara says that Amar Rav Chisda, Haide Adifna Mechavrai, Denesivna Beshitzar. I got married when I was 16. He says, "V'i hava nesivna bar besar." Had I gotten married at 14, "Hava amina l'satan gir beinecha," I could laugh at the sun. I'd be able to laugh at the sun. Okay. And Rashi says like this. Rashi says, "Kolomer hayisi mizgarib over satan." I could taunt the satan. He says, "The satan who yetzahara." Okay. What is the satan? Rashi says, "Yetzahara." Person's instinctual drives. Okay? V'lo ira shiyachtiyani. And I would not be afraid that the instinctual drives would cause me to sin. Okay? So what's he saying? He's saying the same thing. That if had I satisfied my instinctual drives at an earlier age, I would not have engaged in certain thoughts, you see, certain ideas, which made an impression on me. I became fixed to those ideas, you see. And once my mind was fixed, now the satan, there's always a weak spot. You see, the satan, the instinct could always get you, lure you, with a certain unrealistic fantasy of what pleasure is. When a person actually experiences the pleasure, they see what it is. It's a reality, you see. That is not so tempting. That's not something that really tempts a guy. It's not the reality of the pleasure. It's the idealized image he has in his mind of this fantastic enjoyment that I'm going to get. You see? That's what really gets the guy. You see? So that's what he's saying. He's saying, once I set up in my mind that image of this fantastic, unbelievable enjoyment that I'm going to get, you see, that image you can never totally obliterate, so it's always there. Okay, so that's always a weak spot that at some moment, you see, under a pressure, a guy can revert back to that and say, "Ugh," and get caught by that fantasy image. You see, that image of like infinite pleasure that he can't resist. See, but he's saying, if I had the enjoyment, if I got married earlier, I never would have set up that image, and then something could never get me. Impossible. Never get me. Because I know what the enjoyment is. I'm not going to fall for it. You see? Now that's what he's saying. Once the mind sets something up, you see, it's permanent. You can reduce it, but it's still there. Okay?
You said that the fact that you got married at 16
is, you see, that it's a, that the mechanism is there. You see? And that mechanism, once it's engaged, you can't really totally erase the process. You can reduce it, but you can't erase it. Okay? Yeah. I just want to bring in one more.
Maybe Laurie has this question.
Right. Not, that's it. You had your chance.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, let me ask one thing on that.
Chaf Tesamarov? No, just purely coincidental. Okay? right. Okay, so the Gemara says like this. It's a famous Gemara that the Shimon Hapkuli, okay, was his the Yudches Brachos, the Fnei Rabban Gamliel. Okay, so he said over the 18 Brachos Shmon Esrei. Okay. Okay, yeah, so the Chachat, so they said, the Gemara said, is there any man that could be Mesakein Birkas HaTzdukin that knows how to construct Birkas HaTzdukin, Lamal Shim? Okay, Omad Shmuel HaKatan V'tikna. So Shmuel HaKatan was able to do it. Okay.
Sorry, what was the question? I didn't get that.
Oh, the question?
Yeah,
the question was that they were being Mesakein and bringing back. They were instituting the 18, the Shmon Esrei.
Right.
Okay. And then, so there was only Yud Ches Brachos, 18. So now we have 19, because we have Lamal Shinim as the 19th. Okay, but that came later. So what happened was, somebody said, they wanted to find somebody who could construct Lamal Shinim, the 19th Bracha.
Okay. When they were coming up with it, you mean?
Yeah.
They wanted someone to write it.
Right, they wanted somebody that could, that would be able to formulate is a good word. Formulate that bracha, okay, because apparently that's not such a simple thing. To formulate a bracha, okay, in general, is not such a simple thing. But particularly the bracha of Lamal Shinim, okay, requires a special type of person, special type of chacham, okay, special type of nature. It's not a normal. It's not the normal requirements for setting up a bracha. Okay. So they needed somebody to do that. So it turned out Shmuel HaKatan could do it. Okay. So he formulated that bracha of Lamal Shinim. Okay. Then what happened was, yeah, so the next year he got up to Davin, okay, and he forgot the bracha. In other words, apparently they weren't davening with Siddurim, right? So they were davening Bapeh, and he got up there, he was davening, and he could not remember the nusach of the bracha. Okay? So the Gemara says, he thought about it, okay, for 2 or 3 hours. Tzibur, I mean, they're very patient. Not like nowadays. Where do you find a tzibur like this? Okay? The work day was a little more flexible. They had flex hours. Take your time.
Does it say the tzibur stayed? Maybe.
That's right. Gemara doesn't talk too much about the tzibur. You know? They wanted to stone him. But but they concentrate on Shmuel HaKatan. Okay? So he was up there 2 or 3 hours thinking about it, and they didn't take him out. They didn't remove him. Okay, they left him there. So the Gemara asked that, how could you do that? Because the halacha is ta b'chol ha-brachos kulan ein mailin oso. Okay, if a person makes a mistake or doesn't know what to say in one of the brachos, Okay? So you don't, you give them a chance, you don't take them off. Okay? But the Birkas HaTzedukim, but that bracha, if the Shliach Tzibur can't say that bracha, okay, so the halacha is you have to take him, you have to get rid of him, get a new Shliach Tzibur. Okay? Because they were afraid that maybe he didn't want to say it, because he was a min, he was a Tzedukim. So they said that you can't keep that Shliach Tzibur. If he makes a mistake in that, that's it. Okay? So the Gemara says, so how'd they let him stay up there? Okay, he's Shmuel HaKan, but, you know, what can you do? So the Gemara says, shiny Shmuel HaKan. Nah, Shmuel HaKan's different. He's the one, the Ihu Sikna. He was the one that was masaking it, so we're not suspicious, we're not choshish him. Okay? So the Gemara says, no. True. he formulated the bracha. Back then he wasn't a tzduki. But how do you know? Maybe he became a tzduki. He has bechira and he changed his mind. Okay? So you can't judge him on what he was. So we have to see right. The evidence right now would seem to indicate that he is sympathetic with the cause of the tzduki. Okay? So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye said no. Gemiri. Okay. Tava lohave bisha. Okay, so we know, it's an axiom, that tava lohave bisha. If a person is good, if a person is a tzaddik, he does not become a rasha. A person does not, you cannot have a person that is a tzaddik, is a perfected person, will not become a Rasha. That's a buy. Shocking statement. Okay? So the Gemara says, Velo, is that true? I'm not so sure that that's the case. Gemara says, V'haksiv. It says in Yechezkel, U'bashuv tzadik meitzid kaso, when the tzadik turns from his tzidkas, the osa avel, and he does wickedness. Okay, so the pasuk goes on and says that's it. His tzidkus is gone, and we don't. He doesn't receive credit for his tzidkus. Once he becomes a rasha, that's it. Now he's a rasha. He's judged as a rasha. Okay, so how could that be? So you see, a tzaddik can become a rasha. So the Gemara says, "Ahu rasha meikara." That's if he was initially a Rasha. Aval tzadik meikara lo, but a tzadik meikara not. Not possible. If a person, sees Rasha say anything? Yeah, he says Rasha meikara v'shav meirishaso. He changed from his, he did tshuva from his rishas. Pamim shechoz v'nasa Rasha. He could become a Rasha again. Okay? So then, what's the point? That's exactly the idea of in Kedusha. That once a person has formed in his mind certain patterns of thought, you see, he could do tshuva and he become a tzadik gamur. You see? But that doesn't mean he erases that. That pattern of thought is still there. It just means that he negates it, withdraws from it, and he chooses a different derech, you see, but you can't erase that. So therefore, it is always possible that if the person comes under some type of pressure, you see, some experience in life, he could. It is possible he has an element in the mind to go back to. You see that he could return to that. You see, and that's what it means. But at tzaddik, there's no trace there. There is no trace to go back to. So you don't say he could revert. There's no reversion. Okay? But a Rasha, once a person has that pattern set up in the mind, those fantasies, those images in the mind, it's always latent. And it's something he could revert back to. Yeah.
So can a tzaddik ever become temporarily a Rasha? Because you said no matter what, you're always gonna
he has the pattern.
You're always predisposed to, right? But here's the thing. But that means either way, anyone can still be anything. A Rasha could still be a tzaddik could still be a Rasha. Well, what I'm saying is, you're just a little more disposed to falling back on whatever you originally were.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, exactly.
But
a person always has bechira. A person could be a tzaddik
right.
and become a Rasha. I mean, it's possible.
Right, but just because you're disposed one way, it doesn't say anything about your state now.
Yeah, but that's what are you asking about.
A guy can still be a Rasha now, and a guy can still be a tzaddik now.
That's right.
No matter where you started.
That's right, no matter where you started. So exactly. So what's your question? I mean, so you're saying you're asking on this Gemara. Why do they say that Shimon? What was it again?
Shmuel
HaKatan. Why do they say Shmuel HaKatan? It wouldn't happen to him because he's not predisposed.
Well, they say he's right. He's not predisposed,
no, but that doesn't mean that the man has free will.
Right.
He become a Rasha.
I mean, it sounds like a crazy idea.
Well, okay, but what's it saying? You see, of course, every person has bechira. What do you mean? You're telling me a tzaddik can't? It's impossible. It can't become a rasha. Every person has bechira. You see, but what they're saying. So what are they saying? So your question is, every person has bechira. So I mean, okay, this person's predisposed, fine. But the other guy could do it too, just like he became a tzaddik. Why can't he become a rasha? Otherwise, you tell me he's a robot. Okay, sorry, sir. We don't have to say that the Gemara is saying it's impossible for a tzaddik to become a rasha. That's not what the Gemara is trying to do. Because let's look at the situation. We have a person there, and we're choshesh that maybe he became a rasha. Maybe this tzaddik became a rasha. I mean, do we know what is in the mind of man? It's an impossibility. But we have to go based on our evidence. We have to go based on evidence. Is there a reason to assume that a man who's a tzaddik woke up one morning and said, I want to be a rasha? I mean, anything's possible. You see? But what the Gemara is saying is, we can't look into the mind of man, but we have to go based on what is reasonable assumptions. You see? So what they're saying is that if a person has an element in his mind to go back to, that's cause for concern. Doesn't mean he's going to go back to become a rasha, but it is a weak point in the mind. And if a person doesn't have that weak point, you see, then in terms of our assumptions, no reason to assume the guy's going to choose to be a rasha. He could choose that anybody could do anything. You see, there's an element in man that's free will that we don't know. But we can only go insofar as we know. Insofar as we know, you see, the man has no predisposition, has no weak element, has no latent point in the mind, no latent gap in the mind, you see? So therefore, we don't assume such a thing. Could it happen? Yes. Do we assume it? No. So it's not an assumption, you see? But if a person has that in the mind, then we have a right to bring up the possibility, you see? That is apparently what they're saying. We had God's knowledge, maybe we would know, but we don't. We have to go by human knowledge. Human knowledge is the man doesn't have a weak point in the mind. You see? But if the person was originally Rasha, we can't deny that reality. The man was a Rasha, it means that his mind had tremendous enjoyment from that corrupt thing. Now, how could we say that it disappeared? That'd be irrational. That's all we say. They're trying to bring out a point that the mind is attached to a certain fantasy. It doesn't just disappear. You know what I mean?
So I hear the.
What do you mean the good don't become bad? But anything's possible. It's, if a person has free will. What do you mean? Is this special gzeres hakasa? Oh, you're good. You can't be bad. No such thing like that. So what do you need cheskel? Cheskel's going to... We learn from Pasuk in Cheskel that when the tzaddik becomes a rasha, oh, so you see, a tzaddik could become a rasha. You know, what kind of a thing is that? But the answer is, you see, that if Cheskel is not bringing psukim to tell you what's possible, what's in the realm of possibility, a lot of things are possible. Why is he bringing a pasuk? He's bringing a pasuk to show you that it's not just possible, it's there's something in the man, you see, that leads him there. You see, he's trying to alert you that when a person is a tzaddik, it's not necessarily that every element in the mind is in line with the tzidkus. Sometimes a person could be a tzaddik, and there's still an element in the mind that's drawn to rishus. You see, that he's trying to give you a limud, that a tzaddik doesn't mean that he's uniformly a tzaddik. You could have a tzaddik where there's an element in the mind which leads him to rishus. You see, that's more than just saying a person has bechira. It means a person has something in him that's pulling him the other way. You see, that's what Yechezkel is trying to teach you. That there's something pulling you. It's not just, yeah, you can decide anything. A person can always decide. He has bechira. But he has an element pulling him. And that's what he's showing. That's why it's a kasha on our Gemara. Because if you tell me that a person that's a tzaddik still has an element of rishus in him, so what are you saying, that the good don't become bad? Obviously, he has a pull. Why can't he become bad? You see? So that's what the Gemara says. No. You see, that he has a pull. That pull is not inherent. There's no idea that inherently in man there's always a pull to rishus. Not true. If a person follows tzidkus, there will not necessarily be a pull in the man for rishus. But if he wants practice rishus, that's a different story. You see, then there's a different mechanism, a mechanism in the mind that he will have that the other tzaddik will not have. Okay, so by virtue of that, by virtue of that, you can't ascertain that the man won't become a rasha. Okay, in that sense. Okay, but the Gemara doesn't mean to say that now we can ascertain 100% that Shmuel HaKatan is not a rasha. I can do that. You see? But by virtue of the elements that we know, we have no elements that we are aware of that would be evidence that such is the case. You see, if that is true, that he is a rasha, it's solely his own bechira, and it's something beyond our knowledge. We would have no way of predicting such a thing. You see, but if the man was once a rasha, then you can't say that. You can't say you have no kind of knowledge that would lead you to predict that possibility. That you can't say. You see, so I think that's the answer to the question. I'm not telling you in terms of results that we know 100% whether he's a tzaddik or rasha. Only God can know. But in terms of what we could observe, we have no reason to say that the man would be a man. Why do you need such a perfect guy? You tell me. Oh, okay. Imagine that this man will be, at certain times, under tremendous pressure. I mean, all kinds of competing interests in the arm. This man will be under tremendous pressure. If he could make one slight distortion or one slight alteration in a very minor fact, which doesn't really affect too many things, and will satisfy so many people and will be under such pressure to just change a certain little detail, you could imagine he'll be under tremendous pressure, right? Like, they said, I read in this paper that Obama, they had, the official Democratic, pronouncement or pamphlet, whatever they write, the information on their party stance. And, they originally were saying that Israel is, yes, we're undivided, committed to Israel and Jerusalem. And then that was the Jerusalem part was taken out. We're in favor of Israel. We're supporting Israel, but no mention that Jerusalem is the capital, and that was gone. And just recently, 3 days ago, after Romney's speech about how it's shameful that Obama, doesn't even recognize Jerusalem as the undivided capital of Israel, how shameful that is. Lo and behold, on Wednesday, 3 days ago, the wording of the Democratic statement was changed, and somehow there appeared that Jerusalem is the undivided capital of Israel. So somehow Obama, you know, came to a slight alteration in his views of what really is good and what's not good. I mean, no doubt, you know, due to tremendous pressure, right? So you can see a person that is a leader comes under tremendous pressure. And how much information is contained in the Masorah. I mean, a person of any kind that could crack under any pressure, under the most extreme pressure, that's not totally committed to the truth without any weak point. You see, if a person has any weak point at all, somehow or other, at times of extreme pressure, the mind plays tricks on you and change one little fact. You see? It seems like to us, sitting here in our comfortable leather chairs, not having to face anybody, any crowds, any demands of the masses, seems very simple. I mean, it's a fact. Can you remember a simple fact? I mean, you're going to start changing facts. What's the matter? You're a corrupt person. You see, but you can imagine when you're out of this room and you're facing crowds of people who are angrily accusing you of being the worst Russia in the world, that you are causing people such discomfort with your crazy facts, you can imagine the mind could play a little trick on you. That's it, you know, it's one, instead of, you know, Kazayas is 2 grams, or it's 1.9. What's the difference? Change this life fact. Make your life simple. See, that's not such a simple thing. Not such a simple thing. The mind plays a trick on you, and what seems like the craziest thing in the world seems 100% normal. So the thing is that is the whole Masorah is based on this content. The content of the information that was handed from God to Moshe, that's the whole Masorah. You lose one fact, that's it. I mean, it's a big loss. You see? So you need a person that cannot crack under pressure. Okay? And that is only one person. A person that has no weak points, has no roots, nothing to go back to, nothing to revert back to when he's under pressure. You see? But if he has something to revert back to, that's a weak point. It's a gap. Why should you have that guy when you can get this guy? That's solid. There's no cracks. Yeah.
So,
person, you mean in terms of his state right now?
Yeah.
No. If nothing would change, if he wouldn't be under various situations of pressure and we could pick either guy. Either guy's equally good. You can remember, each guy's committed to the truth, 100%. You see, the only question is, in turn, a person that's about Masorah has to be flexible in any situation, has to be reliable in any situation. And that you can't say about the other guy. Right now you could say, yeah, if everything goes smooth, people are tzaddikim, everybody's interested in the truth, this is perfect. You pick any guy. Any guy's committed to the truth. You see? But realistically, that's not going to be the case. You're going to be faced with people that are corrupt, that want to corrupt, that are questioning you, hitting you from all sides. Not so simple. Right. That's the thing. All right. So I guess pick it up next week.